Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Chaf. Today's daf has been dedicated by Stephen and Adele Bissu in honor of David and Valerie Mizrahi. Today's daf is also being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hadas Bat Yehudit. Ruach Hashem Tanichena Began Eden, and also Le'ilu Nishmat Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichenu Began Eden. Amen. We are starting from the Mishnah on Yutet Amud Bet. En Solin Basar Batzal Ubetza Ela Kedeshi Yitzolu Mebe'od Yom. The first din of the Mishnah is regarding roasting meat, onions, or eggs before Shabbat. The Mishnah says that you cannot roast these three items unless they will be already roasted before going into Shabbat. This is a statement that we have already came across in previous Dapim, and we're going to see that the issue over here was that even Bet Hillel, that normally allows you to do things on Erev Shabbat, even though they are going to go through the Shabbat, as we learned that he does not hold of the concept of Shevitat Kelim, but he is concerned here of the issue of Shem Meyachteh, that if these items are not cooked going into Shabbat, you might come to stoke the coals. And therefore, the Mishnah says, a blanket statement according to everybody, En Solin Basar Batzal Ubetza Ela Kedesh Yitzolu. The Gemara will tell us exactly at what level does the meat have to be in order to be allowed to keep it on the fire going into Shabbat. Second din in the Mishnah, En Notnin Pat Letanur Im Hashecha. One is not allowed to place bread in the oven close to the time that it's going to get dark. Which again, it means you have to not put bread right before Shabbat into the oven. And again, the Gemara is going to explain the ramifications of this din. Ve'lo harara al gabe gehalim. Nor can you place a harara, which would mean a biscuit, or it's like a type of cake, that she says. You cannot place the cake or the biscuit into the oven before Shabbat, al gabe gehalim, by the coals, ela kedei sheyikremu paneha mebe'od yom. Unless the face of the biscuit or bread will become nikremu, as she says, yikremu kemo krum, which means becomes crusted, which means it becomes already cooked, that the top of the bread has like a crust to it. It becomes hardened. That's the first shita. Rabbi Eliezer omer, kedesh yikrom ha-tachton shela. He says, no, which part has to be crusted? The bottom of it. The Gemara is going to explain what is the bottom of it. You have to remember, in the olden days, they used to place the bread on the side of the wall of an oven. So the question is, how do you look at the bottom part of it? Is the bottom part the one that's under the fire, which is on top? Or is the bottom part the part that's stuck to the oven? So the Gemara will analyze that shortly. Next din. Meshalshelin et ha-Pesach betanur im hashecha. This is a law regarding Korban Pesach. On Erev Pesach, the law was that you would have to bring a Korban in the Beit HaMikdash. It was called the Korban Pesach. After you gave the different parts to the Kohen that went on to the Mizbeach, you took the rest of the animal home and you had to roast it, eat it that night. The issue over here is, let's say Pesach comes out on a Friday night, Shabbat. So now, the deen of the Mishnah is that you're allowed to roast your Korban Pesach Erev Shabbat, close to Shabbat. Even though we just learned that you're not allowed to roast meat close to Shabbat, Korban Pesach is different. Let's read Rashi. Meshalshelin et ha-Pesach, which means you're able to lower the Korban Pesach into the oven. Seems they put it over a spit and they let it, you know, roast in an oven, over an oven. And it'll continue roasting, as she says, through Shabbat. V'afagav de ba'alma insulin kedamran. Even though we just taught in the beginning of our Mishnah that we do not roast meat right before Shabbat, hakashare. Here it's permissible. Why? Debne habura zirizinin umadkere adade velo atel lechitui begehalim. The Korban Pesach was slaughtered in groups because you needed to consume the whole Korban Pesach. It's difficult for one person to eat the whole animal. So they would come in groups and they would do it together. So the whole issue is we were concerned that if you put meat right on the fire, close to Shabbat, you might come to stoke the clothes. But here we have everybody in a group, so there's zariza, she says. They're alert. And therefore they'll remind each other. You know, and especially they're involved in doing this mitzvah. So nobody's going to come to stoke because if somebody comes to move the coals, the other guy in the group is going to say, ah, Shabbat Hayom. And therefore they'll remind each other. So there was a leniency to place the Korban Pesach meat on the fire close to Shabbat. Comes the Mishnah and continues. Uma'ahizin eta'ur bimdurat bet ha-moked. Let's discuss first what was the bet ha-moked. Rashi tells us in Dibura Matkel Beta Moked, Lishka Gedolahi, there was like an office on the Temple Mount, Shakoanim Mithamimim Sham, where the Kohanim used to warm themselves up. It was like the heat room. Bimdurat Esh, there was a bonfire there. Hanisiket Tamid, that was always being fueled. Mepenesh Shemalchin Yehefin Al Ritzpat Shayish Ba'azara. The Kohanim used to walk barefoot on the cold marble floors of the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, in order they shouldn't get sick, in order to cool, the warm themselves up, they would go into the special room they called Beit HaMoked. So the question now is, before Shabbat, you want to, you know, light up the Beit HaMoked. So the Mishnah tells us, Umahayzin etta'ur, which Rashi explains, Me'at me'at be'etzim, you're able to put some wood into the fire called Beit HaMoked. I'm reading Rashi. Shaita be'azara, dihi mitba'eret ve'odechem mitashetachshach. You could throw wood into the furnace of Beit HaMoked Erev Shabbat. Ve'lo chayshin ad shemi yukonim sirichim na'v'ayram mitashetachshach. Which means we're not concerned that maybe the wood is not going to catch good, and then the Kohanim on Shabbat are going to come and start stoking to get the wood in that Beit HaMoked to burn well. Gemara is going to tell us again, Kohanim are also Zariz. They're also alert. And we're not concerned that they might come and play with the coals. You probably have a picture in your Perush Chai. Not that you really need it, but picture 204 shows you the Kohen by the Beit HaMoked. Comes the Mishnah and continues. Ubigbulin, outside the Beit HaMikdash, where they also used to light sometimes their fireplaces before Shabbat started. So there the Mishnah says, Kedesh shetocha za'ur berubo. Then already, the Gemara is going to explain the word berubo means the majority of every piece of wood that's in the fire must catch. Which means must already, the fire must be there where it'll stay by itself. Where you're not going to have to come and stoke it. So we're more lenient in the Beit HaMikdash than we are in the Givulin outside the Beit HaMikdash. In the Beit HaMikdash it just says, U'mahazin ta'ur, which is so long as part of it caught fire in the Beit HaMikdash, then we will, it'll just catch by itself. We're not worried that you might come to, Kohanim are going to come to stoke. However, outside the Beit HaMikdash, we're concerned that if a person's not going to have the wood in his fireplace catch in the majority of them, actually all of them, the majority of every stick, then we're concerned that he might stoke and play, and that's Isur on Shabbat. So again, we're more lenient in the Beit HaMikdash than we are in the Givulin outside. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, bepehamim kol shehu. Pehamim is coals. That when it comes to creating a midorah, a fire from coals, as long as the fire catches on part of the coal, so already it's permissible to go into Shabbat like that, because by coals the fire spreads very easily. And therefore we're not concerned that he might come to play with it and or stoke it in order to get it to go they go faster. As she says, "Vidoleket veholeket de'en darka liyot kaba."
Once the coal catches, it's not its way to extinguish.
Veholeket ben sarik lachtot ben.
As opposed to wood, where even though it can start catching, but if it's not on the majority of it, it can dwindle and go out. So therefore, there's a chance that you might come to play with it. So that just reviews. There are a lot of laws in the Mishnah. The first case was the isur of roasting meat before Shabbat. The second din was placing bread and biscuits in the oven before Shabbat. And we gave a certain level if it's crusted on the top, on the bottom. We'll see what that means in the Gemara shortly. The next din was cooking the Korban Pesach. I should say roasting the Korban Pesach on Erev Shabbat, which we said is okay. We were lenient in the Bet HaMoked regarding the wood. We were stringent in Givudin. It's the 15. And the sixth halakha was the Biyudah. If it's Pehamim, he says, if it's coals, it's okay, even if it catches a little of it. Comes the Gemara and says, Vekama. What's the Gemara's question? You just told me that what? Only if the meat is roasted from before Shabbat, then it's permissible to begin the process. So the Gemara says, Vekama. How much is considered roasted? How much does the meat have to be roasted or cooked before Shabbat for you to be allowed to begin the process on Erev Shabbat? So the Gemara says, Amar bin Hazar, Amar Rav, Kedesh shiyitzolu mebe'onyom kema'achal ben drosae. So long as the food is roasted to the level what the Gemara calls ben drosae. Now, as she explains to us, what is this ben drosae level? So he says, Listimaya. It was a name of a group of thieves, of bandits, robbers. And they would eat their meat a third cooked because they were always running, they were always on the go. So therefore, the Gemara is telling us that partially cooked meat we see is edible. Because the Ma'achal ben Drosai would eat it. That's like the minimal edibility level of a other piece of food. So therefore, once it reaches Ma'achal ben Drosai, so we're not concerned then you're going to come to stoke. When are we concerned you're going to stoke? If it's less than Ma'achal ben Drosai, then already on Shabbat you're going to want to stoke it to get it to be edible. We also learned that if it's totally raw, it's also permissible. Totally raw already, we said you take your mind off it, because you're not going to eat it that night. You just leave it there in Shabbat already. Shabbat morning, it'll be cooked. So there's no need to stoke. So if it's totally raw, it's permissible. If it reached Ma'achal ben Drosai, it's permissible. Somewhere in between, after raw to Ma'achal ben Drosai, would be a problem. Why? Because you're going to come and stoke it. So that would be the isur of the Mishnah. I should point out there are Rishonim that learn Ma'achal ben Drosai is not shlish bishul. They learn it is chatzi bishul. That it is half cooked. That's the Rambam's opinion. Itmar Nameh. We have a statement as well. Amoraic statement. Amar Rav Aseh Amar Rav Yohanan. Kol shehu kema'achal ben Drosai. And bo mishum bishule nochrim. There's an isur from the Achamim that says that a goy is not allowed to cook food for a Jew. That would be called bishule goyim. Of course, there's some leniencies if the food was, for example, if you're able to eat the food raw, so then there is no isur on bishul goyim because you were able to eat it without his cooking. There's another leniency that the Gemara is telling us over here, that if the food was already cooked, it was edible. And he continued the cooking process to finish it, there's no isur of bishul goyim. So what's the shi'ud of edibility, that there is no bishul akum after that? So the Gemara says, once you reach the shi'ud of ma'achal ben drosai, that's considered cooked. She's according to the Rashi, one third of its bishul, then the goy finishes it, you have no problem of bishul goyim. Rambam's Gemara says, Tanya, we have a Braita. Hananya Omer. Hananya was the name of one of the Tanaim. Kol shiu kema'achal ben drosae. Any food that reaches the level of ben drosae, one third of its cooking, before Shabbat, mutar lehashoto al gabe kira. It is permissible to leave that food on an open oven, on an open fire. Even though the coals are not shoveled, girufa means they would sometimes shovel the coals out,
would still remain hot, but girufa means they would clean out the oven. Ketuma means they would place, let's say, ashes over the coals in order to cool them down. Now, the reason why Hakamim sometimes would request that the oven be garuf, shoveled out, or katum, putting ashes over the coals, is because they were concerned that you might come to stoke the coals. So if you take the coals out, there's nothing to stoke. Or if you put the ashes over the coals, so by doing that, either it reminds you, because you see the ashes over it, or the fact that the ashes cool off the coals, so therefore it shows your intention that you're not looking to get things hotter. Adrabah, you went and you put ashes before Shabbat over the coals themselves. But Hananya's Hidush is, once food reaches Ma'achal ben Drosai before Shabbat, you can leave that food even on an open fire with the coals exposed. What do you mean? You might come to stoke. Says Hananya, no, once already it's edible, there is no concern that you're going to come and play with the coals. Of course, if it was less than that, then of course she's going to want to make it edible. So come to stoke. So you see, the different applications where the Ma'akal ben Rosai rule comes in. Comes the Gemara and says, Ibaya en notnin etapat. We said that you're not allowed to put bread in an oven before Shabbat until it becomes crusted before Shabbat. And Rabbi El Azar said that ad shiyikrom hatachton shela, the bottom of it. So the Gemara asks, Ibayilu, tachton ha'ich degabe tanur, o dilma tachton ha'ich degabe ha'ur. Ha'ich degabe tanur, o dilma tachton ha'ich degabe ha'ur. Which means, how do you look at the bottom of the bread? Is it the bottom that's flat against the wall of the oven? Like I said, they used to take the dough and place it on the side of the oven. So is the part of dough that's touching the wall of the oven, is that tahton? Or do you consider tahton what's under the fire? Tahton under the fire, because the fire was above. Hence the face that's on top is really under, because it's under the fire. Which part is it considered? If you look in your Pirush Hai, you actually see in 207, tahton each dagabe tanur, and tahton each dagabe tanur. You see how they put their ovens over there? So one is the wall of the oven, and one is by the fire. You have it in your picture there. Gemara answers this question. Tashema, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kedesh yikrimu panea hamdubakim batanur. He clearly says it's the part that is flat against the oven wall. Rashi understands this to say that Rabbi Eliezer is being mahmir, because which part of the bread would get crusted first usually? The one that's exposed to the fire. Which Tanakama said, as long as yikrimu panea, as long as the top gets crusted before Shabbat, it's okay, you could leave it through Shabbat. Bilayez is mahmir. He says, no, I don't care if the top is crusted before Shabbat. That's not enough. That's not baked enough. You have to wait till the tahton, the bottom part, gets crushed, which is a longer afiyah. And if it doesn't get to that stage before Shabbat, it is asur. So that's the machlok between Tanakama and the Bilayezer. How much of the bread must be baked before Shabbat? Tanakama will say the Elyon part, which is the one that's exposed to the fire. And Bilayezer says, no, the one that's attached to the wall. Again, which bakes, it takes longer for it to get baked because it's not in front of the fire. Comes the Mishnah and Gemara continues. Mishalchelin et haPesach. We said that you're allowed to lower the Korban Pesach into the oven on the Erev Shabbat, where Pesach fell out on Shabbat. So you're roasting the Korban Pesach now Erev Shabbat. So the question is, my tama. What's the reason? You just told me in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to start roasting meat Me'erev Shabbat. But when it comes to Korban Pesach, you're telling me it's okay. It's the same roasting. What's the difference? Gemara answers, Mishum dibne habura zirizinhen, which because the group that's involved in roasting the Korban Pesach, they're alert. And they remind each other. It's not like a personal guy that's doing it alone. The Korban Pesach was roasted in a group. So if anybody's going to come and stoke, his friend's going to remind them that it is asur. So comes the Gemara and says, Ha la vacheh. Nah. No, but if it wasn't for this reason, it sounds like it would be forbidden. Which is the only eter for Korban Pesach roasting is what? Bnei Habura Zirizinhin. Implying that without Bnei Habura Zirizin, you wouldn't be able to do it. Give us what do you mean? Ve'a Amar Mor, didn't we learn above, Gadya, Gadya is a Gidi, is the goat meat. Ben Sharik, Ben Lo Sharik, Shapir Dameh. Whether the oven is sealed or whether the oven is not sealed, it's permissible. What's the reason? Because we said that since the wind is detrimental for the meat of the goat, so therefore you're not going to come and start opening oven doors in order to play with coals because the wind is going to blow it. Now the Korban Pesach was able to be brought from the meat of a gedi. So therefore the Gemara is asking, forget about the reason of Bnei Habura. Just say, once you place it on the spit in the oven, you're not going to open the door because it's going to ruin the meat. Even if you don't have the reason of Bnei Habura. So the Gemara says, no, it's a big difference. Hatam mintach. Haka lo mintach. Hatam over there, by the case of the Gidi, the pieces were cut. And therefore, since the pieces are cut, then we say the air affects the tenderness of the meat. However, achalom mintach, but by Korban Pesach, it's one big piece of meat. And therefore, in that case, the wind does not affect it, because it's one big piece that you're roasting. And therefore, if it wasn't for the reason of Bnei Habura Zirizinhin, we would say it's asur, because the guy will open the oven to stoke, because the pieces are, it's one big piece, it's not cut. As she says, Hatam Mintach, let's read it inside, Bi'im Poteach Piat Tanur Ayil Bezika. If you're going to open the oven, the wind is going to go in, Bekashele, it's not good. Hachalo Mintach Dechtiv Al Rosho Va'al Kirbo. And Hashem HaKadosh was the whole animal. It's all from the head and all the innards. They're all one piece. V'maglele lo kashel zika. It's not going to affect it, the wind. Hilkach ilav dezirizinen asur. Comes the Gemara and says, V'mahazin et ha'ur. We said in the Bet HaMikdash, in Bet HaMoked, on Erev Shabbat, the Kohanim are allowed to, you know, start the fire, even though the fire didn't catch in its totality, so long as the fire just started, the Kohanim are permissible to leave the fire like that, and we do not suspect that they might come to stoke the wood in order to get the fire to spread. So comes the Gemara and says, Mina nemine. What is the biblical source that this is permissible? Amar Avuna, lo tevaru esh bechol moshmotechem. It says, you're not allowed to light a fire Bechol moshbotechem, in all your dwellings. So the Gemara makes a derasha. Bechol moshbotechem yatam avir. Yeah, in your dwellings. You're not allowed to light a fire. Aval atam avir b'mdurat b'tamoked. But at the Beit HaMikdash, it's permissible. Therefore, at this point, the Gemara is assuming that making fires on Shabbat in the Beit HaMikdash is permissible on Shabbat. And therefore, we have to understand what the Gemara is teaching us here. The Hachamim allowed on Erev Shabbat for the fire to be very minimal on the wood, even though it didn't catch. Why didn't they make a gezerah on Erev Shabbat? Because even on Shabbat, if you were to come and play with the fire of the Beit HaMoked, it would be permissible. So they're not going to make a gezerah on Erev Shabbat as something that is permissible from Pesukim on Shabbat itself. So the Gemara says, wait, matkif la'adaf hazdah, so the question of the Gemara is, wait, if you're telling me says only in your moshbotechem, but not in Beit HaMikdash, so what are you telling me? Erev Shabbat, the Mishnah should say you can make the fire of the Beit HaMoked on Shabbat. What do you have to start telling me? Erev Shabbat dinim, and Beit HaMikdash is even more lenient. Do it on Shabbat itself. So the Gemara says, Ela Amar of Chizda. Kra ki ata le mishri evarim uperadim uperdarim hu data. The Moshbotechem Pasuk of Havara was not coming to tell you regular fires. You're not allowed to light furnace fires in the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat. What does it mean, Havara is permissible in the Beit HaMikdash? For Korbanot. Which means if you add different fats of the animals from Friday, and you want to continue burning them through Shabbat on the Mizbeach, it's permissible. Or if you have, let's say, the Korban Ola, that was mandatory, that was brought every day in the Beit HaMikdash, including on Shabbat, that you could put on the fire. For that, we weren't gozer. The Torah does not gozer havara. But regular havara is forbidden. Also, now we're back to the question. If regular havara is forbidden in the Beit HaMikdash, how did the rabbis allow the Kohanim just to start the fire of the Beit HaMikdash, even though we really didn't catch good? So the Gemara says, the Kohanim zirizim. The answer is, because Kohanim are alert. And therefore, we don't suspect that the Kohanim and the Beit HaMikdash are going to come to start playing with the pieces of wood in order that the fire catches. The Kohanim, we can trust them that they will not make the Isur. Comes the Gemara and says, Ubik Budin, outside of the Beit HaMikdash, Kedesh Etehoz Ha'ur Berubo. Outside the Beit HaMikdash, we said when you make a fire, the fire has to catch on the majority. So the Gemara is going to explain, what does this majority mean? Mayruban, it seems that the Gemara, the text in the Mishnah, Ruban, our text is Kedesh Tohazaud Berubo. But from the Gemara's question, you see, Mayruban, what does it mean, the majority of them? So the Gemara says, Amarav, Rov Kol Ehad Ve'ehad. Which means every stick of wood that's in the fire, Each stick, the majority of it must be already lit by the fire. So that's a big chumrah, big budin. It's not enough that the majority of wood, no, the majority of every single piece of wood that's in the fire has to already catch. Ruban shel kol echad ve'echad. Ushmuel amar, Shmuel says, kedesh shelo yomru have etzim. He says, so long as it's lit enough where the fellow's not going to say, bring more wood so we can put it underneath it in order to get the fire working. That she says, they would bring small little pieces of wood, kindling wood. It seems that Shmuel is being lenient on the first opinion. First opinion saying it's got to be lit, you know, totally. The whole fire rove of each piece. Saying, no, once already it's lit enough where the guys, they're not going to say, bring more pieces of wood to stick it underneath. That's okay. Tani Rav Chiya L'Siyu'el Shmuel. We have a braita of Rav Chiya that is a proof to Shmuel. I mean, hard to understand exactly the Gemara bringing a proof to an Amora from a Tana, meaning Rav Chiya is bringing a proof for Shmuel. Rav Chiya was earlier than Shmuel. The Gemara says, Tani Rav Chiya L'Siyu'el Shmuel. He brought a proof for Shmuel. They lived in different times. The Maritz Chiyut deals with the years exactly. How could he bring a proof? But that's what the Gemara is saying. Kedesh shetesh shalevet ola me'eleha. So the statement in the Braita was as follows: in order that the flame will rise on its own, velo shetesh shalevet ole al yedei davar acher. But the flame should not have to be risen or go up through something else. What was Rav Chiya talking about? So Rashi in his first pshat says, Rav Chiya was not talking about a fire in a person's house. He was talking about the menorah and the Beit HaMikdash. And he said, when the Pasuk writes that the ha'alot ner tamid, that you have to cause the ner of the menorah to rise, so Rav Chiya explained, rise means you have to light it and keep the fire there by the wick of the menorah enough time that when you pull your hand back, the light will rise on its own. Which means that it will not need any help. But you have to light it there enough time for it to catch to light on its own, that it will not need any aid. So according to that, they're trying to apply Rav Chiya's din of the menorah to what we said by the fire. So long, what's considered a fire? So long as it, when you light it, you're not going to have to play with it anymore. It's olem e'leah. So the same thing in a bonfire. A person's making his house, let's say, whatever, a fireplace. So long as you light it, where you don't have to bring any more sticks to continue fueling it, that's considered olam e'leah. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Rashi rejects this explanation. He doesn't like it. And then he says that Rav Chaya was actually talking about a medorah. Exactly what Shmuel was talking about. Actually a fireplace, where he's telling you that as long as the fire can sustain itself without having to bring anything else in it to continue it, that's considered the fire has started. So again, either they're learning the Chaya by menorah and applying his deen of menorah to a fireplace, or he actually said it by a menorah. Those are the two explanations that Rashi brings. Again, he does not like the explanation of menorah, because this statement we're going to learn in the second perek of Masechet Berachot that we're going to learn, and it's not in the Chaya's name, that statement, that the menorah should be ole me'eleah. Therefore he says it's said by somebody else, and it's not even a braita. So therefore he rather say that Rav Chaya was talking about a menorah. Comes the Gemara and says, Etz Yechidi. Let's talk about a log. You have one piece of wood now. Till now we're talking about a fireplace with many pieces of wood. Now we're talking about you have one log, or one piece of wood. What's the shi'ur of how much it has to be lit from before Shabbat, that you can continue it through the Shabbat? Rav Amar, Rob Ovyo. Rav says, so long as the majority of its thickness catches on fire, the Amrilan, some say, Berov Hekefo, and some say no. So long as the majority of the circumference of the log, even though the inside of it, the thickness of it did not catch. We have your Pirush Chai. You have a picture of that in 209-210. 209 shows you that the thickness of the wood was caught already into fire, while 210 shows you just the outer circumference of the wood caught. It's a big difference. 210 is just showing the outside is starting to light, even though it did not penetrate in the thickness. Now the last shita says, Amara Papa, Gemara, Hilkak Ba'inan Rov Ovyo, Uba'inan Rov Ekefo. So the Papa says, we're going to be Mahmir according to both shitot, which you see in 211. You have the majority of its circumference, and also it penetrated the majority of its thickness. You see, the Papa was Mahmir like both shitot. Ketanae. And actually, this is a mahloket amongst the Tanaim. Rav Chaya Amar, Rav Chaya said, Kede shiyishat ha'etz, or shiyishahet ha'etz, mimelechet ha'uman. Meaning, the wood has to be so burnt, or so lit on fire, before Shabbat, until it becomes non-usable by a craftsman. Which is, after a while, when the wood becomes so burnt by the fire, a craftsman now cannot use this wood for his melacha. That she says, what is that level? Rov Ovyo. Which is when already the fire penetrates the thickness of the wood, it's not usable anymore. He can't use it for any of his things. Which means, if Rov Hekefo, so he just put it out and didn't penetrate, the wood is still usable. So you see, Rav Chaya holds Rov Ovyo. Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera Omer, Kedeh Shetochaz Ha'esh Mishne Stadim. Which means so long as the fire just catches both sides on the outside, which we would call Rav Hekefo, people miss. So again, you have a machloket b'tanaim, Rabbi Chaya and Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera. V'afapi she'en ra'aya l'davar. So he says, even though I don't have a proof, let's say from Pesukim to this, sechel l'davar, we have a remez, a little hint from the Pesukim. What does it say in the Pesukim? It says like this. Et shedne kitzotav akhla ha'esh v'tocho nahar hayitzlah limlacha. The Pasuk says the wood was eaten by two of its sides, and because of that tocho nihar, eventually it penetrated the center of the wood. Hayitzlach l'mlacha? Can it be used for melacha? Can it be used anymore? Which means the pasuk is hinting to us: once the fire ate the outside of the wood, eventually, what's going to happen? It's going to penetrate inside the wood. So he's saying from the pasuk, all you need is rov hekefor. Because once you have rov hekefor, that the wood is going to catch. It's going to go and penetrate inside. It's an emes. It doesn't say beferush of the pasuk that you need rov hekefor, but we can say an emes on the pasuk in Yechezkel. That she says, just to explain the words in this pasuk, Zeche ledavar, deshuv holech bedolek, that once you have rove kefor, the fire is going to catch, shnei kitzotav achla esh biyadua, then already it's known, shetocho nihar, so nihara, she's learning, is dry, is moisture, which means once already you have rove kefor, you could know that the inside is dried. Nihar pasak lehashela, it's moisture left. So therefore, that's what the pasuk is saying, that once already you have rove kefor, the inside dries up and it's not even usable for melaka. Comes the Gemara and says further, we have a pasuk in Yirmiyah. I will quote you the whole pasuk. V'hamelech yoshev bet ha'choref b'chodesh ha'tishi'i v'et ha'ach lefanav mevo'aret. Rashi tells us this pasuk was talking about the king of Israel, Yehoyakim, that was in the time of Yirmiyah ha'Navi. Yirmiyah HaNavi went to Yehoyakim and prophesied to him the destruction of Yerushalayim and Churban HaBayit. He actually presented to him Megillat Echa. And when Yehoyakim heard the terrible destruction, he was not happy with the prophet's negative report, and he took it and he burnt it. He took the Megillah and he burnt it in the fire. So the Gemara says that, or the pasuk writes, he was sitting in his Bet HaChoref, that's where the fire is, that's the winter room where they have the furnaces because it was cold. And it says, Ve'et ha'ach lefanav. He had the ach in front of him. So the Gemara wants to know, Ve'ach lefanav mevo'aret, and the ach was in front of him burning, my ach. What is this ach? What is this word? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ahvana. What is Ahvana? She says Arava, willows, which means the fire was being fueled by the Aravot, by the willows. That's Ahvana. Ushmoel Amar, it seems shenidleku be'ahva. It was pieces of wood that were being lit by each other. Ah would be like a brother, which means you had the little pieces of wood that were lighting the big pieces of wood. He was sitting in front of a fireplace. What type of fireplace? With ha'ach, where it was like brothers of wood, so to speak, that were kindling each other. That's what she says. Kol ha'etzim nidlakin ze mize ha'katan madlika gadol. Okay? So either ach is coming from the Aramaic ahvana, which is arava, or it's coming ach, the Hebrew word, brother. Ha'hu de'amar lihu. There was a peddler that said to the customers, "Man ba'e ahvana, who wants to buy ahvana?" Ashtakah arbata, and they saw that he was selling arava. So you see that the word ahvana means arava. Amar Ravuna. Ravuna now taught again more laws regarding a fire. Kanim or kinim. Or kanim is reeds, and sirichim rov. It seems that reeds are very flammable, and therefore, once you light them, even though you don't have the majority, it's okay. Agdan, but if you took the reeds and you bundled them, sirichim rov, then you need majority. Why? Because they're tight, and the fire can't get through as easily. So therefore, when it's tied in a bundle, then you got to go with the majority. But if the individual, even already, if you know they just catch, it's okay. Let's read that in Nashi. Ein Sirichim Rov is the second wide line in Nashi. Latzita Ta'ud Biruban. You don't have to light the majority of them. Me'ayrim Shabbat. Ela Ma'ahiz Ben Ud Me'be'ojom. You just, you know, start the fire. Ma'ahiz Ud. You know, you just light it. These are flammable items, and therefore we're not suspecting that it'll go out. But if they're in a bundle, you need rov. Because the fire cannot go through them because they are tight. Next case, which is a similar deen. Gar'inim. Gar'inim literally are pits, that she says, shel temara, of the dates. So you made, let's say you took these dried pits, they were flammable, and you put them all over the place, and you want to now make a fire using them. So he says over here, Ravuna, in Sinichim Rov, Natnan Behotalot, but if you took all the pits, the dried pits, and you put them in baskets, as he says, Kelim She'osim Melulavin, the baskets are made out of palm trees, so they're also flammable, Venatana Kli, Meloam Bemidorai Maleh, you put the whole keli in the fire, Sinichim Rov. Then you need rov. Why? Lefishet sivurin yachad, because all the pits are together. Now again, the fire doesn't catch that easily, so you have to make sure that on each pit it has rov of it burning already. Tzirichim rov. Okay, so that's the din of Ravuna, kanim and gerainim, individual better than together. Matkif la Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda comes along and says, Adrabba. On the contrary, ipka mistabra, the opposite makes most logic. Kanim mebaderan, when you have the kanim that are separate, they scatter, and therefore we're not sure that they're going to light from each other, because they could scatter in the fire, and therefore you might come to stoke them and then light them. Agdan, but when they're all together, lo mebaderan. They don't scatter, and therefore once you start lighting part of it, it'll catch. Gerainim, the same thing, when they're individual, mibaderan, they're going to scatter, and therefore we're not sure that they're going to catch from each other. Natan bechotalot, when you put it in the basket all together, lo mibaderan. So therefore we have two exact opposite sivarot. Rav Huna holds, tying them is worse, and Rav Chisda says, Adraba. It's worse if they are separate. Comes the Gemara and says, Itmar name, Amar Rav Kahana. Now Itmar name literally means we have a statement from Amoraim that support this. Now we're going to read the statement and see what exactly it's supporting. Amar Rav Kahana. Kanim she'agdan, Tzirichin Rov. Lo Agdan, and Tzirichin Rov. When it comes to Kanim, Rav Kahana teaches us, if you tie them up, then you need Rov. If you didn't tie them up, you don't need Rov. Meaning, when it comes to reeds, he was posek like Rav Huna. However, then he says, Gar'inin, Tzirichin Rov. Natnan Behotalot, and Tzirichin Rov. When it came to Gar'inim, he was posek like Rav Chisda, that when you put them in the basket, so then already in Tzirichim Rov. So Itman Nameh is a funny terminology to introduce this statement, because he's not bringing a proof to anybody. He split the ticket. He holds like Rav Huna, he holds like Rav Chisda. He didn't bring a solid proof to one of the shitot. That's why if you look at the top Rashi, Rashi's Dibur HaMatril is Rav Kahana Amar. It seems that Hashim did not have the words Itmar Nameh, which would make sense. Because the Itmar, the statement of Rav Kahana, is really not aligning himself with Rav Huna totally, nor Rav Chisda totally. He's taking a piece of Rav Huna and a piece of Rav Chisda. So if it comes out, we have three Shitot. Comes the Gemara and continues. Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef taught. Arba Midorot. There are four fires that if used with very flammable fuel, you do not need rov. You do not need the majority. Once already it's lit, already it'll go by itself. What are these four flammable items? Shil zefet. Zefet, I guess, is the pitch. Veshel gofrit would be sulfur. Veshel givina, that's our text, which is the cheese. I guess it has the oil of it. Veshel revav. Revav, Rashi says, is shuman, is like the grease. Veshagava, or like, you know, the wax, all these things that melt. Now, there is a gimel over here that would take us to the Gaon Mevilna, which changes givina and inserts kira, which would be wax. Okay, so that's a machloket if it's givina or it's kira. B'matnita tana, in the braita we have, af shel kash v'shel gebaba. Kash would be straw, or hay. V'shel gebaba would be the, I think they call it the stubble.
Yeah.
Okay, if you look at the picture in 212 in Pirush Chai, you see a stalk. Okay, so the bottom half, which is the part when you cut the stalk, a little piece of it remains in the ground. Okay, that little piece is called gebaba. Because they collect it from the field. Okay, they collect that little piece that's in the field. The top part is called kash. That she called it zinavot. It's the tail of the shibolim. Bottom line, the top part of the stalk, of the shibolet, and the bottom part that remains in the ground, they collect, both are very flammable. Kash and gibaba. Therefore, if you light a fire with these items, you don't need rov. Amar Yohanan. Yohanan said, it seems shel Babel, the wood from Babel, in Sirichim Rov. It seems that there's that special wood over there that was flammable. Matkif la Rab Yosef, Maihi. What is that wood? Ilema Silte. If it's referring to Silte, as she says, Le'achar Shasum Etzim Dakim. Which means in Babel they would take, let's say, the logs, and they would cut them down into thin strips of wood. So if that's what it means, Silteh means the thin strips of wood, and that you tell me is very flammable. Can't be. Hashta petila amar ula hamadlik sarik shiadlik berov ayotze Silteh mibaya. We're going to learn later on in the second perek that if a person is lighting Ner Shel Shabbat, the Friday night candles, so you have a wick. The deen is you have to make sure the fire is on the majority of the wick. So the Gemara is saying, if by a wick, which is very flammable, and still you're telling, which is soft, still you're telling me why you have to have rov, otherwise we're concerned that you might come to play around with it. A piece of wood, called sheken, you have to have at least the majority, which means we're not going to be lenient on a thin piece of wood. Is a thin piece of wood better than a wick? A wick is soft. If on a wick, it's enough to have, if you have to have rov. Kol sheken on a piece of thin wood, so you should need rov. So what are you telling me? The wood of Babel, just a little flame? So Gemara says, I read that inside. Hashta petila amar ula madlik sarik shadik merov ayotze. Shiltem ebaya. El amar of Yosef, shucha de'arza. What is shucha de'arza? She says that by the cedar, in between the bark and the tree, there's a certain type of tzemer, like a woolly substance that's in between, as she says, and that lights very quickly. So when it said the Babel wood, it's not the Babel wood. It's really talking about shucha de'arza. Shucha de'arza, again, the wool that's in the Erez tree, if you light that stuff, once you light the part of it, the whole thing will light itself. But the wood itself, those little fine things he holds, you got to have rov. Comes again when it says, Rameh bar Abba Amar Zaza. Rami bar Abba says, Zaza. That she says, Mulcha Belaz. The way they explain it is the moss. Moss is also very flammable, he's telling you. And therefore, if you light it, even if you don't like the majority, it's okay. Hadran alach yitziot ha-Shabbat. And now we start the second perek. The second perek of Masechet Shabbat is very familiar to at least the Sefaradim that have the custom to read all the Mishnayot of this perek on Friday night as part of our tefillah. The perek is called Bamim Madlikim. Our perek is going to discuss the permissible wicks that one may use to light Friday night candles, and the proper fuels that one may or may not use for the lighting of the candles. Now the issue over here is certain wicks do not light properly, I mean they flicker, the fire doesn't catch good on them, and therefore we're concerned that you might come to play with it and therefore make a fire on Shabbat. Certain fuels, as we'll see, also do not draw properly to the wick, and therefore they're going to be non-usable as well. The Gemara is going to explain the reasons and the different styles of wicks and fuels. Let's begin. Bameh madlikin. Ubameh en madlikin. So the Mishnah asks, what can you use, as she says, la'asot petila? So the question is, what are considered kosher wicks? Ubameh en madlikin. And what's considered not kosher wicks? So the Mishnah says, en madlikin. It starts off with the second part of the Mishnah. Mm. You see a style like this in Mishnayot. I mean, it started off with the question, what's the good stuff? And what's the bad stuff? And then the Mishnah answers the second question first. Tosafot right in the top says, pa'amim mefaresh ma'id desalik mineh, or pa'amim b'mash yetchil. You see both styles in the Mishnah. Sometimes it answers question number one, and sometimes it answers the question that it just posed. In this case, it's answering question number two. En madlikin lo belechesh. And these are names of wicks. We will see the interpretations of all of these in the Gemara. So let's just call it what it is at this point. Lechesh, not kosher. Velo bechosen. Velo bechalach, velo biftilat ha'idan, velo biftilat ha'midbar, velo biroka sh'al p'nei ha'mayim, with the green that's on the water. And that is the end of pasul wicks. Now the Mishnah is going to tell us pasul fuels. Lo bezefet. Zefet, we learned already, is pitch. Velo b'sha'ava, that is wax. Velo b'shemin kik oil. Velo b'shemin serefa, that's oil that halakhically has to be burnt. We'll see what type of oil halakhically has to be burnt. Velo be'aliyah. Aliyah would be, let's say, from the fatty part of the sheep's tail. Velo be'halev. Halev would be regular fat. Nachum Amadi omer madlikim be'halev mevushal. Nachum Amadi says, no, but if you cook the fat, the fat was cooked, then it's permissible. Whether the fat was cooked or whether it was not, and madlikin bo. So now we are going to see the Gemara that is going to explain these things. Lechesh. The first pasul wick in the Mishnah was en madlikin lo belechesh. What is lechesh? Gemara says shucha de'arza. Okay, we know what shucha de'arza is. Shucha de'arza came from the cedar. So the Gemara says, wait, shucha de'arza, it's be'almahu. That's wood. Which means at this point we thought we're talking about the bark from the cedar tree. So the Gemara is saying, the bark from the cedar tree? That's wood. How can you use wood as a wick? Wood is a fuel. So the Gemara says, you're right. Be'amranita de'idbe. Amranita is the woolly substance that is behind it. So therefore, that lechesh is the woolly substance that's behind the cedar. It's within the cedar tree. What's the problem with it again? It doesn't catch. It's not a good light. It flickers. And therefore, we're worried that the person might come to play with it and not get the fire to catch on it. Therefore, it is pasul. Next one. Velo behosin. Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef. What is chosin? Ne'oret shel pishtan. Ne'oret shel pishtan is the? The flax. It's a form of inferior flax, we'll call it. That is an English word for it, probably. The toe of the flax. Okay, T-O-W. Okay, which is the point, is inferior flax, that it doesn't catch good. Amar le Abaye. So Abaye has a question. Ve'akitiv, the Navi says, Ve'aya ha'chosen le'ne'oret, which means, literally the Pasuk is saying, the strong one is going to become weak. So the Navi gave a mashal. The chosen, which would be the, let's say, the good flax, is going to be turned into ne'oret, which is the inferior. But bottom line, you see, chosen is one thing, and ne'oret is something else. So how could you tell me that chosen is ne'oret shel pishtam, and the Navi classifies them as two separate things? Gemara says, fine. El amar abaye, kitna didayik vela nafids. This is, now we're giving a new interpretation to chosen. It is kitna didayik, it is flax that were beaten, velo nafits, but they were not combed. Okay? You see in 213 in the Pirush Hai, kitna didayik, kochin, they beat it. Nafis, you see they run it through a comb. It seems when they run it through the comb, it becomes finer. However, if you didn't run it through the comb, it's not going to catch. It's still like knotty a little, and therefore it's not considered a kosher wick. Comes the Gemara and says, Velo bechalach. That's the next wick. Amar Shmuel, sha'altinu lechol nachutei yama. He said, I asked all the sailors on the waters, the amre, and they told me, kulcha sheme, that the proper name for this kalach, it's what we know, kulcha. What is kulcha? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzhak bar Zaira Amar, gushkira. What is gushkira? That she says, psolet shel meshi. Again, it's the inferior part of the silk. It seems that the different levels of silk, and gushkira is not the the good part of it. And it seems, what do you say there?
It flickers.
It flickers, yeah, it doesn't catch good. Ever it flickers. Comes the Gemara and says now. So again, at this point we're learning this chalach that the sailors called kulcha is really gushkira, which is inferior silk. So comes Gemara and says, Ravin ve'abaye, havu yadve kameh deravina. Ravin and Abaye were in front of, now we have Ravna. Do they change that to Ravina? In the het. Okay, deravna.
Rabbana.
Fine, if that was his name. So Ravina and Abaye were in front of Ravna. Nehamya, Ahu Deresh Galuta. Which means, Rav Nehamya, the brother of the Resh Galut. Hazya Dava Lavish Matachsa. So this Hashuv man, brother of the Resh Galut, brother of the Exilog, was wearing a robe that was called Matachsa. Was made out of a certain type of silk. Amar le Ravin Abaye. So when Ravin saw this robe that Rabbi was wearing, he said, "Ah, Hainu Kalach Ditnan. This is it. This is the Kalach that we learned about in the Mishnah." Which means he's obviously arguing on Rav Yitzhak Bar Zeira, because Rav Yitzhak Bar Zeira said it's Gushkara, the inferior silk. And he came along now, Ravin, and said, nah, that's kalach, this hashuv silk over here. So now we have a mahlok, and now is it the good stuff, or is it the inferior stuff? So Amar Leh, so he said, Anan Shira Franda Karinane. Says, no, we don't call what this rabbi is wearing, this matakhsa, we don't call it kalach. We call that Shira Franda, we call it the Franda silk, which is hashuv. So Abaye is holding that kalach is the inferior stuff. So out of mahloket, is the kalach the good stuff or not the good stuff? Again, let's just review the story over here. Rav Yitzhak Bar Zeira came along and said, kalach is gushkira. It's the junk of the silk. Rav Nehamya, the brother of the Resh Galut, was wearing metaksa. So Ravin came along and said, oh, this is the kalach. I mean, he was saying kalach is the good silk. Abaye said, no, we don't call what he's wearing kalach. We call that Shira Franda, which is the good stuff, but the stuff in the Mishnah was the inferior stuff. Etive, there was a question. Hashiraim, Shiraim is silk. Vakalach.
והסירקין חייבים בסיסית. All these iron sirkin, that she says, asui min ha-meshi arach. It's made from the soft silk, ha-metpasel, that falls over, u-matsui b-meshi, v-kurin lo b-mkomenu yadash. Do you have a word for sirkin?
Corded silk.
Corded silk. Okay, fine. So yeah, these are all forms of silk. Shira'im, regular silk. Kalach, whatever form it is. Basirkin hayavim besisit. All these three things are hayav besisit. Which you have a garment made out of any of these silks, you must put sisit on it. What's the hadush? Now she gives you two understandings. One shita says that the only things that are hayav in sisit, mina Torah, is either a garment that's made out of wool or a garment that's made out of linen. So this opinion is arguing on that and saying, no, even silk items are hayav min ha-Torah. Or that she gives an alternate explanation that this opinion is agreeing with that opinion and saying, you're right, I agree, wool and linen is min ha-Torah if the garment is made out of it. These items will only be hayav b'sisit mid rabbanan. In any event, what do you see? You see that shirayim is silk. Kalach is silk. You see that what? That the Braita puts them separate. They're two different items. So therefore the Gemara says, Kiyuftah. This is now a question on Ravin. Because Ravin, he came along and he saw the Mataksa, which is the regular silk. And he said, that's Kalach. What do you mean, that's Kalach? Our Mishnah is telling you that there's Shirayim and there's Kalach. How can he call them a taksa Kalach? It's two separate things. So Gemara says, I can answer, Shira lechud v'shira franda lechud, which means there's different types of silk, which means the bright that I talked about, CC, just mentioned Shirayim, that's silk. The mataksa that the rabbi was wearing, that's called, like Abaye said, Shira franda, different item. And that shira flanda, that's what the rabbi called, Rabin called, kalach. So therefore you have the case of sisit. Let's review the words now. Shirayim would be regular silk. Kalach would mean shira flanda, which is the same name that they would call that cloak that the rabbi was wearing, which Abaye and Ravin had a mahloket. Ravin said, that's the kalach of the Mishnah. And he said, no, it's a separate item. Comes the Gemara and says, Velo biftilat ha'idan. What is biftilat ha'idan, the petila? The wick of idan. So the Gemara says, ahvina. Ahvina, that she says, arava. The willow tree, which is the arava, it seems there's woolly substance again between the branch. So they would use that for a wick. It's not a good wick. That's piftilat ha'idan. Idan, the wool in the willow tree. Rabin v'abay Abu Kazle be'fakta de tamrurita. They were walking through the valley of tamrurita. Hazanu lehanihu arbata. So they saw these trees, these willow trees. Arbata meaning aravot. Amale Ravin Abaye, Hainu Idan Ditnan. Says, oh, this is the Idan that we learned in the Mishnah. When the rabbis are walking, they were reminded, oh, this is what we learned about in the Mishnah. Amale, Hai, it's Be'almo. So what are you talking about? It's a piece of wood. How could you tell me that that's talking about a wick? It's a tree. Kalaf. So he peeled it. The Ahve Le Amranita de Beni Beni. He peeled it and showed the wool that is in between. And therefore that is the Biftiat Ha'idan. Ve'lo Biftiat Ha'midbar. What is Biftiat Ha'midbar? Gemara says, Shabra. What is Shabra? Does she mean Esev Aruch? It's a form of long grass. The English calls it?
Nettle.
Okay. Ve'lo Biroka Sha'at Pene Hamayim. I'm not using a wick from the green that is on top of the water. Mahi, what is this green on top of the water? Ilima uchmeta deharitze. If it's talking about, as she says, makom kanus mayim, where you have water, let's say by the docks, that they collect, gadela im kemin yirakroket. grows over like algae, a green over. If that's what it's talking about, you can't make a wick out of this algae. Gemara says, "Ifruche mifarchan." What's the question? It falls apart. Gemara and Mishnah wouldn't even discuss it. You can't even make a wick; it has no consistency. So Gemara says, "El amara papa uchmeta de arba." It's the green stuff that grows, Rashi says, on the bottom of the boats. It's the moss. When the boats sit in the water for a long time, the hull of the boat starts to get green on it. So you want to take that stuff to make a wick out of it? That is not good. So what is that called? Velo biroka shalpere amayim. Tana. We have a Tanaic statement. Hosifu alehen shel tsemer veshel se'ar. Which means the rabbis added two more wicks that are pasul, that are not mentioned in our Mishnah. What are those two wicks? Shel semer, a wick that's made out of wool. The shel sehar, what's made out of hair. So the Gemara says, V'tana didan, our Tana, why didn't it list them then? So it says, semer michvatz kafitz, which means when you light wool, it's michvatz, like it curls up. Which means there's no way you can really use it. Se'ar and hair, ehruchem mehrach. Se'ar, it just singes the hair. And therefore it's also not viable. So comes the Tosafot, and he says, ve'lo itztarech tana dematnitin lemitni. Therefore the Mishnah did not have to mention them. Ve'im tomar, kevan dematnitin nami savra desemer v'se'ar pesulim nadlaka imken mayosifu. Which means, we said that the Tana came along and added to. What do you mean you added? The Gemara's concluded that the Mishnah agrees. And it just didn't list them because this one curls up, this one burns. So you didn't add anything. The Mishnah agrees to what you're saying. So why did it say Hosifu? Not by Hosifu, no Hosifu gloom. So Tosfot says, the Yeshua de Hosifu hainu ta'ama mipne she'en moshkim Hashem en yafeh. They added another reason, which means the Tana of our Mishnah learned the reason why these things are no good, either because it curls up or because it singes. Hosifu, the rabbis in the Braita, added another reason why it's pasul. Because why? It doesn't draw the oil properly. Just till now, we never saw that reason. We always saw because it flickers. Now we're learning that certain consistencies like se'ar and semer, it doesn't have a good draw. The oil doesn't draw nicely, and therefore it's pasul. Therefore, it wasn't adding new cases. It was adding new reasons why these things are going to be pasul. The Gemara continues. Velo bezefet. One of the fuels that the Mishnah said are not good is zefet, which is pitch. So the Gemara says, zefet zifta, which is the Aramaic interpretation for zefet, which again is the pitch, the tar. Sha'ava, that was also, we said, is not good. So we say that is kiruta. That is wax. Now, the Gemara continues, Tana, ad kan pesul petilot, which means until this point, meaning until biroka shal pene hamayim, that was the last wick. From that point on, when the Mishnah said lo bezefet ve lo beshava ve lo beshemikik, mikan vailach psul shemanim. That is referring to the psul in the fuel. So the Mishnah discusses both things: wicks at first that are no good, and then it discusses the oils that are no good. Gemara says peshita, but that's obvious. She says, what does the Mishnah have to teach us? Obviously, we could know that when it says zefet, it's not talking about making a wick out of Zefet. Obviously it's talking about the fuel. When does the Gemara even have to tell me this? So the Gemara says, Sha'aba itztarichale. Yes, the Hiddush is in wax. Because one of the cases that we said that it's a pasul fuel is lo bezefet velo beshaaba. That is a Hiddush. What's the Hiddush? That wax is a pasul fuel. Ma'u detema, I would have thought, liftilot namelo hazya. I might have thought that not only can't you use shahava as a fuel, I might have thought that it's also pasul as a wick. Kamash ma'lan, no. Now when we said shahava, it's only saying it's pasul if you use it as a fuel. However, if you use it as a wick, it's kashin. Now how do you use
wax as a wick. So Rashi tells us, Mao detema niftilana mikasarla. I'm sorry, Shavat tarichale. Rashi dibur matir Shavat, two lines on the bottom. Lefi shirigilot taasut kimin petila aruka vapetila letocha kemo shanu osim. I mean, they would make a wax candle like we have, and they would stick a wick inside of it. So really, you're lighting wick, but it's being fueled by the wax. So you might have thought that that is also not kasher. Kamash malan, that is considered okay, which is a wax candle is not considered the isur of using wax as a fuel, because there it's attached to the wick. It's one piece, and therefore it would be kasher. But the Mishnah says lo b'shava. That's talking about where you're using the wax as a fuel, let's say, and the wicks is separate from it, which means it's not surrounded by the actual wick itself like a candle. So then when the Gemara has to come along and say, when we mentioned Zefet and Shava and these cases, it's discussing using them as a fuel. But if you're using them as a wick, meaning not that you're lighting the wax, because wax is not a wick, meaning if you put a wick inside the wax, like you have a candle, that will be kasher. You might have thought, no, kamash malan, it is okay. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar ami bar avin etrana. Now, it said in the Mishnah, etran, one of the pasul oils, as we will see, is etran. You're going to see it coming up. So it says, what is etran? It says pisulta de zifta. That she says that it is the residue of the pitch. That she says le'achar sheyotze hazefet min ha'etz, after they extract the zefet from the tree, from the wood, zav mimenu al yedei ha'ur psolet, when they heat it up, a residue comes out of that, and that residue is called etran. Fine. Sha'ava. And what is, when the Mishnah says sha'ava, which is literally wax, pisulta didubsha, that's the residue that comes out of the honeycomb, which would be like the beeswax, which we'd call that. When we say wax, it's referring to beeswax. Right? So the Gemara says, lemay nafkamina. What do I have to know this for? Which means, what's the question of my nafkamina? I'm telling you what it is. So Tosafot explains, pshita lela shas shayu makirina sha'ava va'itran. It seems these things were well known. When you said the word sha'ava, they knew what Shava meant. And when they said the word etran, they knew what it meant. So therefore the Gemara is asking, for what halachic purpose did the Gemara see to have to define explicitly what Shava is, what etran was? So comes the Gemara and says, nafkamina lemekahumimkar. It's a nafkamina for business. Meaning, if a person goes to a seller and he says he wants to buy Shava, and he uses that word shava, he can give him beeswax. And now the buyer can't say, mekach ta'ut. No, I didn't ask for this over there. I wanted, the better wax. No, shava means beeswax. If you go to the guy and say, I want etran, he can give you the residue of the pitch. And you can't come along and say, no, I want you to refine it more. No, you ask for etran? Therefore, there is a nafkamina in the laws of Mekah, for business. In the previous shiurim and in the upcoming shiurim, we are and have